Do you have an idea for a podcast, but you don't know where to start? Maybe you're overwhelmed by all the tech or you're convinced nobody will actually listen to you. Well, I'm Shauna Game. After 9.5 years as a professional podcaster, at this show, Everyone's Talking Money, and 25 million downloads later, let me tell you the secret to a profitable podcast. It is building a solid foundation, your podcast roadmap before you launch. That's why I created the Podcaster Class, a fast-paced group cohort podcasting for profit 8-week style MBA program. The Podcaster Class is immersive, comprehensive, and insanely motivational. If you want to create a podcast, DIYing a launch is just not the way to go. In the Podcaster Class, you'll get the tools, tips, and strategies to create a podcast that resonates with listeners and one you can be proud of. Get this, 90% of podcasters never make it to episode 3. That's 2.8 million podcasters who just quit. So to be a top podcaster, you only need to publish 21 episodes, but you got to make them good. So in the Podcaster Class, I'm taking the mystery out of how to create, launch, and profit from your podcast so you can create a top 1% podcast just like this one. The May cohort is now open for enrollment. Classes start May 22nd. There are only 15 spots open. You are going to learn podcasting with me and 14 other amazing people. You can learn all the details at thepodcasterclass.com. Use code podcast when you sign up for $100 off. That's thepodcasterclass.com. When it comes to financial advice, you got to trust the source. It's why you listen to this podcast. When I'm looking to upgrade my wallet, I turn to NerdWallet. Their expert team of nerds dives into the details to help you find smarter financial products. Before NerdWallet, I was paying for vacations all wrong. I was missing out on miles. I didn't even know I was leaving on the table. Now I've got a new card with more miles and more upgrades. What could future you do with more travel rewards? I don't know, maybe that fancy hotel upgrade that you have always been dreaming about. Wherever you go next, make it happen with a smarter travel credit card. Don't wait to make smart financial decisions. Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. NerdWallet, finance smarter. As with all cards, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply. Hey, I'm Shauna Compton Game. This is Millennial Money, and today we have a millennial chat with actor Kenny Liu.
Millennial Money with Shauna Compton Game. It will expand your brain.
All right, so we have a really interesting millennial story that we want to share with you this week. So tell us a little bit about who we've got up.
Well, what about if a guy who immigrated from Taiwan, didn't even speak English until he was like 6 years old, competed on the U.S. Wushu team, which is a Chinese martial arts, essentially. He earned a degree in mechanical engineering from UC Berkeley, no less, started his own business right after college, a startup business in Silicon Valley, sold it, and then just a few years ago decided to go into acting, and now he's starring in a bunch of things, including a major TV miniseries.
I would say that's definitely an overachiever, and it's making me feel like I've not done enough in my life.
Yeah, I mean, this guy's a young guy, and yet he seems like he's, you know, lived many lives so far.
Yeah, and I think that's so cool because he probably brings all that experience into his roles, which, you know, makes him even better as an actor.
Yeah, so we're talking about actor Kenny Liu. So he, like I said, he immigrated from Taiwan, born in Taiwan, raised in the Bay Area, and now he became an actor just a few years ago, like I said. He's mainly known for his iconic role as Gohan on Dragon Ball Z, which is a series on YouTube they had out a couple years ago, and they just released a brand new episode that's out on YouTube right now, Dragon Ball Z, The Light of Hope, which is out on YouTube right now. So check that out, and we'll have the link for that. But Kenny is now currently also starring in the National Geographic Channel Iraq War-based miniseries, The Long Road Home, which also stars Michael Kelly, who plays the chief of staff on House of Cards.
the good guy on House of Cards, not the one that's been in the news lately.
Well, he plays a bad guy, but he's not that guy from House of Cards. And then Jason Ritter from Parenthood, he has a new TV show, and there's a bunch of other really great actors. But Kenny plays this pivotal role in this miniseries here, and I caught the first episode, and I'm recording the next few episodes, and it was really intense. I mean, it's like, you know, American Sniper kind of intense. But he just has this really cool story of just like, hey, I'm going to go do this. I'm going to go do this. And you know, and now I want to be an actor. And he, you know, talks about just chasing his dreams.
Yeah. And I think that's what makes this story so great. And especially, you know, towards the end of the year, we're all thinking about like New Year's resolutions and things that we want to bring into 2018. And certainly one of them is, you know, we all have all of these goals and dreams that we want to achieve. And so I think it's really cool to always hear stories like Kenny's, a fellow millennial who, you know, has had so many different like career iterations throughout his life. And is just like, you know what, I'm going for it. And, you know, he's getting good roles and his career is building. And I think it's just a great story to share at this point in time.
Yeah. So enjoy our conversation with actor Kenny Liu.
You know, I really love your story. You know, you immigrated, you know, your family, you were born in Taiwan and you grew up in the Bay Area, came here to America, and now you live in LA as an actor. You know, how much connection did you have growing up to your Taiwanese, you know, upbringing and stuff?
A lot, man. Yeah. I didn't speak English until I was like 6 or 7, to be honest.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I moved here when I was like 3 months old.
Okay.
But my family didn't really, like, they were really like, you know, fresh immigrants. And so they didn't speak English too well. And we didn't have any relatives whatsoever in California. And so it was a very, we were a very tight-knit family growing up. And so, you know, went to Chinese school on Saturdays. And yeah, outside of that, like, I went to school and I remember going to preschool and with my big sister, and I was like, man, what are they saying? We're in Chinese. And yeah, so it was pretty, looking back on it now, as someone who identifies himself very much as American, I'm realizing it was quite a special upbringing.
Right, right. I mean, well, at least in the Bay Area, there's, you know, obviously a lot of, you know, Asian descent in the Bay Area though, right?
Yeah, no, that's totally true. Actually, we grew up in an area that was very Filipino.
Okay.
In NorCal is also nicknamed Little Manila.
Yeah.
And so my middle school is like 80% Filipino, and so I felt like, yeah, I mean, they're Asian as well, although our cultures differ quite a bit. Yeah. So it wasn't like too unfamiliar for me growing up. Like, I didn't grow up in the middle of Kansas or something, you know.
Right.
But yeah, the Bay Area is really nice in that way, in that like there's just so many different cultures. Our high school was like a quarter Black, a quarter Hispanic, a quarter Filipino, and the quarter like everything else. So it was very, looking back on it now, it's a very interesting way of growing up.
Well, another interesting way, you have a really interesting path how you became an actor. I mean, you first got your engineer degree at UC Berkeley, and then you started your own business.
Yeah.
So what was that startup business that you actually started?
Well, it was a basic legal services startup called Law Pivot. And basically, I teamed up with a bunch of my friends who were all lawyers. One of them was a lawyer and an engineer, degrees from Stanford and Berkeley. And so we decided to team up and do something to try to revolutionize the legal industry, because at the time, we felt like you know, legal system was still very ripe for a revolution, like especially with the internet booming still at the time. We decided to start a business where basically you can have your legal questions answered for a flat fee versus having, you know, billable rates with one lawyer, and could basically crowdsource your answer. So for example, you pay a flat fee to us for, I think it was like $50 or something. And we would take your question, we would algorithmically match it with the correct area of law as well as the right jurisdiction, and send it to like half a dozen to a dozen lawyers, and you would get, you know, like 6 to 12 answers. And that way you can see if your legal advice that you're receiving is actually accurate, as well as seeing if, oh, wow, this lawyer communicates really well. I think he'd be a great person that I can use to fulfill, you know, my legal needs.
Right, right. That's totally interesting. Had you always had acting kind of on the radar, and when did you kind of have that aha moment that you wanted to steer your life in a whole different direction?
Yeah, well, I always knew that I loved acting, because in middle school I had done like 10 plays by the time I graduated. I was known as the kid who was like the actor in middle school. I was always like the lead of these plays. And I don't know what had happened, but I don't know if it had something to do with like cultural values, or if I just didn't see, you know, many Asian people on TV. But in high school, I was just like, man, I love doing this. I better stop. And so I didn't pick it up again until well after I graduated from college, and I was working at the time, and I was like, wow, I'm really bored on the weekends. Let me try this thing that I used to love doing. Mm-hmm. And then sure enough, I booked the first thing that I get, and there's an acting coach on set who was like, man, I think you've got some natural talent at this. So let me coach you. And I went to his place like once a week for 2 years. And he helped me see that, you know, like this can be something more than, you know, just a hobby. It became a side job for me while I was working at my startup. And then it was when I sold the startup that I was like, man, I don't have to work full time anymore. At least for a while. I was like 27, 28 at the time. I wasn't married, didn't have kids. And I was like, man, I really want to see what being a full-time actor is like. And so that was when I was like, well, I know I've got a successful engineering career, but I would really regret it for the rest of my life if I never tried this and saw where this path led me.
Kenny's got some sage advice for anybody that wants to start a career in the arts. I'm sorry, but I have the best dog ever. Her name is Winnie Stardust. She is a mini golden mountain doodle, full of life, and I would do just about anything to keep her happy, healthy, and safe. Today's episode is sponsored by the ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program. Your pet is part of your family, and you want to do the best for them. But vet bills can really add up. We jokingly keep telling Winnie she needs to get a job to pay for her vet bill. That's why you should check out pet insurance. And with ASPCA Pet Health Insurance, you can focus on the care your pet deserves and cover what matters most. The ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program offers customized accident and illness plans, making it easier for pet parents like you to help your pet get the care they need. The ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program has been around for over 18 years, and they've helped more than 600,000 pets during that time. They allow you to customize your plan, helping to ensure that your pet's plan is as unique as they are. Because vet bills can really add up, especially when you are least expecting it. It's simple. Use their app to submit a claim, and you'll receive reimbursement for eligible vet bills directly into your bank account. To explore coverage, visit aspcapetinsurance.com/etm. That's aspcapetinsurance.com/etm. Again, that's aspcapetinsurance.com/etm. This is a paid advertisement. Insurance is underwritten by either Independent American Insurance Company or United States Fire Insurance Company and produced by PTZ Insurance Agency Limited. The ASPCA is not an insurer, is not engaged in the business of insurance. The weather is getting warmer. I'm so excited, and it is time to say goodbye to all those jackets and sweaters and hello to the shorts and t-shirts. I wanted to update my summer workout wardrobe for the long haul without, you know, spending a fortune. Luckily, I found Quince, and I am in love. Quince is your go-to place from everything from premium European linen dresses, blouses, and shorts from $30, washable silk tops, timeless 14-karat gold jewelry, and so much more. The best part of all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes those savings on to you. And Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes. I love that. Okay, I bought the dreamiest pair of workout leggings and a bright pink workout top to match. Honestly,
Ladies, I gotta tell you, these leggings you need. The price cannot be beat, and I feel like a million bucks wearing this cozy workout-friendly outfit. I've worn it for like 5 days straight. Get warm weather ready with Quince. Go to quince.com/etm for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/etm to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/etm. Okay, friend, I want to know, what are your money goals this year? Are you saving to buy a house or maybe a wedding or a dream vacation to somewhere tropical? If that's you, please, please take me with you. Or maybe you want to just grow your emergency fund because, let's be real, life is expensive. I want to make sure you reach your goals, so you need Monarch. That's why the Wall Street Journal named it the best app for growing your savings. Monarch is the top-rated all-in-one personal finance app. It gives you a comprehensive view of all your accounts, investments, transactions, and more. You can create custom budgets, track progress towards your financial goals, and collaborate with your partner. And now, get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/etm. Here's what I love. Monarch is the most customizable budgeting app. You can change the layout of your dashboard. You can go between light and dark mode. You can create custom budgets and notifications. You can set up all of these automatic rules for your transactions and notifications, and so much more. Monarch is obsessed with constantly improving their product. Get this. They release updates every 2 weeks, and they even allow customers to submit suggestions, vote on requested features, and view the product roadmap. This, my friend, is totally original. Plus, they will never sell your data to third party or show you ads. I think that's really important. After trying out Monarch for myself, I understand why it is the top-rated personal finance app. And now, listeners of this show get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/etm. That's monarchmoney.com/etm for your extended 30-day free trial. In those moments when money is just not moving as fast as your dreams, Earnin provides the financial momentum you need to keep moving forward. Earnin is an app that gives you access to your pay as you work, up to $100 per day or up to $750 per pay period. You just download the Earnin app and verify your paycheck. Then you access up to $100 a day as you work, and you can leave an optional tip. Any money you access plus tips are automatically repaid from your next paycheck. I honestly would use Earnin in lots of different ways, but what's on my mind recently is I need a night out. I need some good tacos to sip on a few virgin margaritas and celebrate you all helping this podcast earn 26 million downloads. Make Earnin a part of your financial routine and join Earnin's over 3.5 million customers who say things like, "When I think about Earnin, I think about financial stability and security. Gives me a lot of peace of mind." Download Earnin today, spelled E-A-R-N-I-N, in the Google Play or Apple App Store. When you download the Earnin app, type in "Talkin' Money" under podcast when you sign up. It will really help the show. Talkin' Money under podcast. Earnin is a financial technology company, not a bank, subject to your available earnings, daily max, pay period max, and location. See earnin.com/TOS for details. Bank products are issued by Evolve Bank and Trust, member FDIC.
I moved down to LA about January of 2014. And yeah, so it was a long process, man. Like, I don't think it would be very responsible of me to suddenly be like, "Hey, I want to be an actor." I had to really test. You know,
yeah.
Like, and that's a piece of advice I would say to anybody that wants to pursue an art, especially coming from a career that, you know, you've already bled for and like earned a degree in and like, you know, built a business or whatever. Like, you know, like try it out, see if it's really something that you want. And because it takes so much passion and so much hard work to succeed as an actor, as an artist. And you have to really know that it's what you want to do before you step into it. And I knew that I was. Because I was like, despite working full time like job at a startup and helping to start it, you know, every spare second that I had, I was like looking at castings and trying to work on things I wasn't getting paid for, like for acting jobs and all kinds of stuff. And so I knew I did that for years, and I'd even in time just pass by real quick.
And I was like, man, okay, this is, I love doing this. I better really pursue it.
Right. And you, I like how you mentioned on your website about creating positive images for Asian Americans, you know, in acting and stuff like that. So, tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, that's something that's very important to me. I grew up in a very diverse neighborhood, like, as we had covered. Yeah. And something that I never realized was just how special that was. You know, like, I have a lot of friends who grew up in other parts of the United States. And I feel like a lot of my Asian American friends have a lack of pride in who they are. Mm-hmm. A lot of them, like, want to assimilate. A lot of them kind of have, you know, shed their, trying to shed, you know, their heritage. And I think that's a very awful thing to do to yourself. And so one thing I've realized about myself is that, wow, like, I'm very proud to be who I am. I think I've got my heritage, my culture has something to offer, as well as just Asians kind of having a place in the fabric of America. You know, we've been as much a part of American history as any other ethnicity, and yet we don't really see that reflected on TV. And so what I hope to do is to be able to represent Asian Americans in media, and not even in a way that's like, hey, pay attention to me. But then it's more like, hey guys, like, we're part of this too. Like, I want to be identified as American because that's how I grew up. You know, right. Like, my values are very, very truly American. And I want to be a part of this community just as much as anybody else.
Right. And I mean, and for me, I grew up in Orange County in LA, and you know, I was, you know, surrounded with nothing, you know, but we had so many Asians growing up and stuff like that. Essentially, you are Americans, and I think that's cool that maybe even someday we get to the point, oh, you're not Asian American, you're American. You know what I mean? Like, we're not even, you're not an Asian actor, you're an actor. You know what I mean? It'd be great to get to that point towards, you know, just this, that. Yeah. It's normal.
That's what I hope. And I still feel like we, as an Asian community, like, still kind of lack that, you know, like, when we have dialogues about, you know, like, racial progress or something, like, I still feel like we are lacking in that area, because a lot of us, I feel like, have just detached from it and decide to pursue an academic career or, you know, a professional career, and don't really care about the social impact of, you know, our presence as a part of the fabric of America. And right. That's something important to me, is to say, hey, we're here too, you know?
Yeah.
And we've got to contribute, and we would love to be a part of this with the rest of everybody.
Right. Well, but growing up, you did do martial arts, and you were also on the national team, the U.S. national team as well?
Yeah, that's correct. I was on the United States Chinese martial arts team. That was something that was another part of my heritage. Just like, I'm really into salsa now, and I've discovered that for a lot of Hispanic Americans, like, salsa is something that they learn just as, you know, learning from their family. Like, yeah. It's very much a part of the culture and the heritage. And martial arts is the same thing for especially Chinese Americans, but for a lot of Asian Americans. It's not the same way that a lot of Americans perceive it, which is like, how do you fight? Like, how do you defend yourself? How do you, like, apply this and beat somebody up? Martial arts in Chinese culture is very holistic. It's a very spiritual practice. And so that's why you see a lot of people doing Tai Chi, or you see somebody doing a sport like I did called Wushu, where we're not really fighting anybody, but a lot of it is your mind, body, spirit connection. Like, you are doing it for your own well-being and for your own health. And it's a form of expressing yourself. So yeah, it's a very different take on what martial arts is versus what most of us perceive it is in the West.
Right. And also too, you got to use a lot of that martial arts in your upcoming Dragon Ball Z thing that's coming up on YouTube, right? That's going to start soon.
Oh yeah, yeah. That's actually launching tomorrow.
Okay. Okay. Cool.
Yeah. Totally. Totally. Yeah. Dragon Ball is a very popular Japanese anime, and we adapted it to live action. And our first episode has 28 million views.
Oh wow.
And this next episode now is like a much fuller film. We spent another 2 years on it, and we're expecting a lot more people to watch it as well, because we've really put so much more into it than the first one. But yeah, the martial arts really applied, because
If anybody's familiar with Dragon Ball, it's very grounded in a really famous Chinese story called Journey to the West. And the martial arts that are needed in Dragon Ball, like, needs to be very cinematic and very grounded in Asian roots. And so it can't be something like Born Identity or, you know, like, where it's shaky cam
right.
and people are, like, emptying each other and, right. and that kind of stuff. It's not that. It has to be – it's a very stylized, like, almost Hong Kong-esque style of fighting that needed to be present. And so my Chinese martial arts background, like, really helped with that, because Wushu is very much like that. You know, there's a lot of posing and there's, like, a lot of – like very stylized ways of kicking and punching that that is critical to having the fight be convincing.
Right. And how cool is it that you were actually watching those cartoons as a kid and then you actually got to play, you know, them now as an adult, an actor and everything.
Oh my God. Yeah. Yeah. Anybody who's a fan of Dragon Ball has always wanted to be a Saiyan, which is the alien race that is,
right.
that is very prominent in the series. And, yeah, it was a dream come true, man. And honestly, like, when I was growing up, I thought Dragon Ball was just an Asian thing, you know? Like, I always was very ashamed of it. Like, I would hide in my room and like, watch this cartoon that, like, on PBS or
right,
something.
Right, right, right.
And then as soon as I get cast in this thing, man, and we get invited to all these Comic-Cons, I'm looking around at the faces that attend our panels,
right.
and I'm just... wow, this is so diverse. Like, one of our co-creators, his name is Donnie McMillan. He's African-American. And his wife is Rita McMillan, who is Hispanic-American. And we would go to all these cons, and then we would have African-Americans, we would have Hispanic-Americans, we would have Asian-Americans, like, all, like, such huge fans of this show.
Right.
And it was completely mind-blowing to me how universal... something is really universal about this story that kind of, like, everybody can tap into. And I really like being a part of it because it's one of those rare times where I feel like everybody's just united under something as ridiculous.
Right.
You know, golden, like, for your heroes, right. like throwing key blasts and flying through the air and stuff. So it's a very pleasant feeling to be a part of, a show like this.
Right, and that's gonna live on YouTube. That is already on YouTube, I just say.
Yeah, yeah. There, the first episode is, and then we have a full, much more full film coming out. I believe we're gonna be launching that at midnight tonight.
Okay, cool.
Which makes tomorrow.
Right.
yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, we'll have the link up then for it too. Cool. So, and then now you're starring in, you know, this really big miniseries for the National Geographic, The Long Road Home, with Michael Kelly from House of Cards, Jason Ritter, you know, and I before we started this interview, I watched the first episode last night, and it's so intense, and you're really great in it.
Yeah.
Tell us about that. Tell us about the series and your character, Sergeant Eddie Chen.
Yeah, this series is it's called The Long Road Home. It's an 8-part TV miniseries. Same team that did Band of Brothers, basically. The show is very similar in the sense that it's a miniseries, and we've got each episode focused on a specific character. It's based on a true story in Iraq during the Iraq War, when these 19 guys get pinned down by 10,000 insurgents, and it's about them trying to survive this 8-hour ordeal in which they are pinned down inside of this house in Iraq. And what makes this story special is that, man, like, we had all the vets who survived the ordeal come out to set before we even started shooting and give us their blessing in telling the story. Because National Geographic was like, man, here's $60 million. Here's this book that this is based on, by Martha Raddatz, who's an ABC journalist. Mm-hmm. And, you know, do whatever the hell you guys want. Like, we're not going to make you politicize anything. Just tell it accurately.
Right.
We don't want this story to be another, like, go US military. We want it to be very much a story about what is it like to be a soldier and all of the good and bad things that had to happen out there for these guys to survive. And it was very eye opening for me, because when I met these vets, man, and, like, they, at least half of them, the only reason why they even came
was because National Geographic had promised them that, hey, we're not gonna like lie about any of this. Mm-hmm. You know, we're gonna tell the truth about everything. Mm-hmm. And all the trauma, like how difficult it was to be out there, all of that. We're not gonna try to paint you guys as like, you know, some explosion hero or like some action hero. Mm-hmm. Because that's not what happened. Right. And these guys were like, thank you, finally. Thank you, somebody's telling our story right and not exploiting us for, you know, getting butts in seats or you know, ticket sales. So that's what's really special about this story. And for Sergeant Eddie Chen, he's a Taiwanese American who grew up in Guam. And he ends up passing in this story. He's the only guy in this platoon that ends up dying.
Oh, okay.
And he was very special. Yeah, he was very special to the guys in this platoon, because he was a little bit like a big brother to everybody. Mm-hmm. And yeah, when he passes, like everybody's just like, man, we're not going to survive this, are we? Mm-hmm. So yeah, he's got a very critical. He's a very critical part of this story, and especially being the only Asian American soldier, like. When I was first there, there was a big reunion that was thrown for all these vets who came by. Mm. And as soon as they saw me, I'm the only Asian guy in this platoon. Like, as soon as they met eyes with some of these vets, man, like tears just started like streaming down their face. Right. Because they knew immediately who it was.
Mm. Right.
And you're playing Sergeant Eddie Chen, huh? And I'm like, yeah. And they would have to hide their faces because they're like tears, like this is like 13 years of like hiding it, you know, not saying anything to their family or their friends about anything of what happened. And they would turn to me and say, thank you for playing him. He was one of the best guys we ever knew. I wish I could have done more for him. And then they would all roll up their sleeves and they would have a bracelet, with his name on it still, where it says like, rest in peace, my brother, Sergeant Eddie Chen.
Wow.
So, yeah. So like, oh my God, that first week that I was there, like just, there were a lot of tears being shed.
Mm.
And, it was just such a brotherhood that I've never felt before. It makes this one of the most meaningful things that I've ever done in my life, is be able to tell this story right for these guys who felt like they've been misrepresented and exploited for so long.
Right. Well, and we're also going to see your character in a few more episodes as well too, right?
Yeah. I go beyond just the first episode.
right. That's great. Well, how was it actually working, you know, with these guys too? And did they teach you kind of how you need to do a lot of things too and stuff like that in the film?
Oh, yeah.
Cause you guys actually trained in Fort Hood too, right?
Yeah, that's right. The Army was very generous. They gave us a bunch of tanks. They gave us Humvees. They gave us a big plot of land on Fort Hood Army Base in Texas. And they built like 200 buildings for us to simulate Sadr City, Iraq. We had all the vets walk through the city to make sure that it was accurate. And whatever they thought needed to be fixed, we fixed it. But as preparation for this role, like we had a couple of Army Rangers, Michael Baumgarten and Jericho Denman, who made us go through Army boot camp. so we got training for it as well. Like they did such a great job of helping us prepare for this role, and so we can try to tell this story as accurately as possible. You know, because this I felt was very much for the vets, by the vets. Because we had a bunch of them stay on as technical advisors and that kind of stuff.
Right. I mean, it just sounds powerful as it is, and it shows so much on the screen too. I mean, it really reminded me a lot of like, you know, something like, you know, American Sniper or something like that just really gets intense, you know, as it goes on and stuff. And I wasn't expecting what the story was actually about. I was like, oh, okay, it's about kind of one incident, and then it kind of tells that whole story through multi parts. And so I think it's a fascinating piece.
Yeah, exactly. And as great as that first episode is, like the real meat of it is in the middle of a series when it shows some really awful things that had to happen out there, you know, like some of the difficult choices that some of these guys had to make. And it doesn't glorify that. It shows kind of how, what it does to a person to have to kill people, and not just one person, but let's say several generations of the same family. Mm-hmm. Some kids had to die too, was shot by American soldiers. Mm-hmm. And National Geographic was like, we're showing that because that's what's happening. That's what happened.
Right.
And they didn't want to poo-poo any of that, you know, like they didn't want to soften that message for, so that we can go, yeah, U.S. military.
Right. Right. I mean, it's just really kind of telling this, you know, this is what happened. This is where, you know, this is how things actually unfolded, you know?
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Well, before we let you go, you talked about, you know, your business that you started up and your career and go to actor and everything like that. What's like some really good advice you would kind of tell a younger millennial that is, you know, just starting out or maybe wants to even make a shift in their career, kind of like you did?
Yeah, I would say stay true to yourself. Especially as a millennial, we've got such a wealth of choices these days. You know, like you with the internet, you've got access to pretty much anything you want to read, any video you want to watch, anything you want to listen to, and it helps the most to know yourself, because otherwise you'll just get distracted. You know, like don't compromise on what you truly want and your dreams are, because it's very easy to be led astray and end up doing a job that is close enough to what you truly want to do, but not really what you really want to do. So I would say know yourself.
Right. Do you think, since you already started a business before, do you think that's something down the road that, you know, you feel like you could always go back to, you know, doing a business and then acting at the same time?
Yeah. Absolutely. One of the strengths of having been an engineer, an entrepreneur prior to being an actor is you can apply everything that you've learned to whatever you set out to do. Mm-hmm. And so as an actor, like really I'm running a small business.
Yeah.
In a lot of ways.
Yeah.
And second to that, like later on, if I ever want to start my own company again, then I can use those experiences. I'm much stronger for it. So absolutely, I would say keep going and keep doing whatever interests you, because as you keep rolling, you know, your ball just keeps getting stronger and bigger and faster.
Right. Well, last question I have for you, since you've been in LA for now a few years and stuff, have you become a Lakers fan, or are you still a Warriors fan?
Well, I've always been a Warriors fan, okay. Even before, you know, they got really good.
Right.
so, yeah, sorry, LAers, but I'm going to have to stick with the Warriors.
Right. Right. Especially now. Why not? I mean, you know, I mean, they could be, you know, back-to-back champions this year, too.
Yeah, hell yeah. When I was growing up, the Golden State Warriors were like the joke of the, right. the league. And next thing I know, like I'm like, wait, what? We won the champ? What?
Right, right, right. That's awesome. Exactly. So, well, Eddie, thanks for coming on the show. We totally appreciate it. Where can we find, you know, any of your work? You know, tell us your website and where we can find any of your work and stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, if you want to follow me on social media, you can look me up on Instagram or Twitter at the Kenny Liu, which is spelled LEU. And if you want to look for any of my work, I've got a website, kennyliu.com.
We've got all Kenny's links in the show notes, so head on over there to check out everything that he's up to. As always, you can follow me on Instagram and Twitter at Shauna Game. You can check out Jeff on Instagram at The Traveling Game. And if you love this podcast, do me a favor, share it with your friends, shout it out on social media, and head on over to the link in the show notes and leave us a review.